Welcome to Reality TV, your source for snarky reality TV recaps. It's me, Jody, and this week I am back breaking down the best and worst moments of 90 Day Fiancé, Before the 90 Days, Unexpected, and Married at First Sight. If you are watching Teen Mom OG, I promise you, I am working on being able to fit it in my schedule, so hang on tight, I am on it. Now this week on Patreon, I am going to be deep diving into this documentary called Gloria Vale. It is on Amazon Prime. Gloria as in Gloria, I think I have your number, Vale, V-A-L-E, not Gloria Ville, Gloria Vale. Like I said, it's on Amazon Prime, and this, well, let's just call it like it is, religious cult is like the Duggars on the Old Testament times 1,000. It will blow your mind. It's 3 episodes. Watch all 3. I'm going to deep dive on it. I'm going to look into what's going on with it now. Just trust me on it. Go to patreon.com/realitytvpod. We got to talk about it. Only $5 a month for early ad-free episodes, plus bonus episodes, just like this Gloria Vale one I'm doing. And you get an invite to our Patreon-only Facebook group. Also, make sure you're following me on Instagram and Twitter at Reality TV Pod, and you are joining our Facebook group, Reality TV Orchard of Snark. And man, you know, it's apple picking time. We know Evelyn of the Evelyn Cormier Band, our namesake of the Reality TV Orchard of Snark. She would be loving some apples this time of year. So come on in there. Let's talk the good shit. All right. Well, speaking of good shit, let's get into 90 Day Fiancé. I gotta start out with some Darcy and Jesse because this episode was one of the most cringeworthy episodes of these two, and I was friggin' loving it. Now, we start off with Darcy in the car trying to breathe through her ugly cry despite the enormous protruding left breasticle coming out of her clavicle at a 90-degree angle. I have been cursed with large breasts myself, and even that was a lot for me to wrap the geometry around my brain. It's leaving me speechless, okay? I don't even know what was going on, but it was painful to watch. Now, Darcy doesn't want to go back home because she wants a free weekend in New York City on the show's dime. I'm sorry, what? Oh yeah, she cares about her daughters or some shit. Right. Now cut to JVP, Jesse Von Trapp, smoking a cigar on the street, acting like he does this all the time, like he's just having a smoke. He's smoking a cigarette after a stressful conference call. No, you dork. You know he saw that shit in a movie, found the nearest convenience store smoke shop on the street, and just pulled a classic douchebag move. However, he wasn't ready for his curtain call, so he texts Darcy saying that she can have his hotel room. He's going to bring her bags to the room out of love. Okay, sure, Jan, right. Now, we all know that he's gaslighting her, but you know what? Darcy's not a victim because she was loving it. Now, finally up in the hotel room, Darcy walks right in, sits down, reclines in that white IKEA office chair like Sharon Stone, and she tries to tell Jesse off. But Jesse, in classic Von Trapp fashion, tries to mind fuck her, but they both get so wrapped up in the faux leathers and their furs and whatever the hell is going on in that really horribly remodeled hotel room that it's just yelling back and forth. Jesse's telling her to just go have some drinks, Darcy, and Darcy is just being wished all the best over and over again. I wish you the best, Darcy. I wish you the best. Now, I honestly think Darcy went into that bathroom. Bear with me here. You know this is a lot for me to say, so you know I mean it. I think she went into that bathroom just to rip some gigantic farts out because she had to have been just gulping in a shit ton of air because of that corset, right? I mean, she can't take even a little breath. She hasn't been breathing. So when she does, it's like a, so her rib cage expands. You know what I'm saying? I think we can all be confident that she was more relieved about letting the farts out than Jesse leaving the room. Okay, now, well, it turns out Jesse booked another room in the hotel, which I think was his plan all along, right? He gets a new view into the other high-rises around, fresh victims to stare at with his longing Dutch empty eyes. Mission accomplished. But we're not done yet, because another mission was about to be deployed. This one in My Lord Douchebag's Calvin Klein by TJ Maxx undies. Jesse rings up Darcy while drafting his manifesto, and she invites him down to visit her. You know, like just an innocent Southern Connecticutian woman does. Yeah. And then Darcy tells us that they did it twice. Well, Jesse claims he came into Darcy's room to find her unresponsive on the floor like a CPR doll, and he revived her, supported her, and then left the scene like the one guy, Good Samaritan guy in the Bible. It's been a few years since Catholic school. I tried. Now, the amount of highlighter alone that Darcy is putting on her cheekbones, and let's even throw that headband in there just to hide her messed up extension roots. Those things together tell me, Jesse, your version of the story, that is a lie. Now, it goes without saying, we say this every week, Jesse is the worst. But this comment about him being able to breathe again because Darcy's gone, bullshit, because I know that scarf he's wearing. My mom bought the exact same one from Stein Mart last 4th of July. It is a cotton rayon blend, and it doesn't breathe at all. So zippy lippy, we've had enough of you. Okay, well, let's talk very briefly about Marta, because, spoiler alert, she doesn't have a 90-day fiancé. She is meeting with my fantasy BFF, however, Mother Marta, who enjoys a nice chilled rosé. I can get on board with that. In her very brief time on screen this week, Marta finally admits that Dazin never sent the letter she needed for the visa, so she canceled her trip. They haven't had any contact since, and although Marta thinks it's because of her religion, let's be honest here, it is pretty damn clear this guy was just using her for whatever it was that she was giving him. Money, photos, whatever it might be, this guy had no intention of ever meeting her. Now, despite Marta not showing us quite what she has to offer, because like I said, we really haven't got to know her that well, I agree with my bestie, Juanita. Marta can certainly do better. Let's get to my favorites, okay? Angela and Michael. Michael, you want to keep these? You want a quickie? I actually think Michael probably kept those blackout sunglasses on just to shield his eyes from anything he may or may not see before he leaves. Who knows what Angela's got up her sleeve when she knows she's not going to be getting laid for a while. Now, before we get to the airport, which was, we're going to talk about it. I really want to touch on this scene where Angela is waving and saying goodbye and calling her farewells to the hotel staff, because it reminded me of Dorothy on The Wizard of Oz. She's getting in that hot air balloon. Goodbye. Goodbye. I'll never forget you. I mean, it was like, it was magical. It really was a magical moment for me. I think if TLC or Sharp Entertainment had their eye on the ball, that would be the TV show that they should have been filming. What did that hotel staff see? What did they say? What did they talk to each other about after they cleaned her room, or the interactions that they saw go down, or interactions that they heard go down with Michael and Angela? I mean, maybe I should have gone into production or whatever you call it when you think up shows. But anyway, let's get to the airport. They're saying their goodbyes, and Michael, he's got everything he needs to pretend to cry. He had his water bottle, right? I mean, he can splash some on his face. He's got a little hanky, a handkerchief, if you will. We got to bring that word back, handkerchief. He's pulling it out, trying to do the Amber from Teen Mom, where he pushes on his eyeballs in order to produce tears. But no, we never saw any actual tears. Michael never looked happier than he was when he was wheeling up those bags to the airport and waving to Angela like a little kid waving goodbye to the wicked stepmother. He could not wait to see her ass walk through that gate and be gone. And then here we go. Blue screen, and we see, upon arriving in Georgia, Angela tried to use her debit card and found her bank account was empty. Unable to reach Michael, she called the producer who was filming Michael's interview in Nigeria. Now, truth be told, I screamed when I saw that first screen. I didn't even make it to the second screen before I had to pause it, write it down word for word, because the moment had arrived. I mean, it is here. We know for sure that Michael was screwing her over. We knew, but when you see it in, I was going to say black and white, blue and white, it's the moment we've all been waiting for, right? So, yeah, I screamed. The dog next door started barking at me, but whatever. Doesn't matter. But I also want to make sure that we see exactly what went down here. Angela couldn't get a hold of him. She's at the bank. Then she calls production. Production gets her in touch with Michael. This is all further proof that the FBI, the ATF, all of our local law enforcement, detective agencies should be exclusively staffed and run by women. Who run the world? Girls, that's right. You want to find something out, you put a woman on the case and you will have it solved within 30 minutes or less. We're like beating dominoes time here. Okay, well, the camera guy hands his phone over to Michael, who says that he has no idea what Angela is talking about. And meanwhile, back in the States, Angela is screaming. I think it looked like it was in the middle of an airport bank or something. She's screaming at the top of her lungs that she told Michael he could take out $300. A little unclear to me whether she was there when he did it or she told him that he could take $300 out without her being there. But in any event, he took out $300 three times in a row. So now she's out $900 and she only has $1 in her bank account. So Michael stole her damn money and he is a snake who is now trying to deny it. Now, if you look in the previews, he seems to admit to it. And I don't think we really were on the edge of our seats to know whether he did or didn't. Clearly he did. Now let's talk about Rachel and John. Seeing babies on this show is like seeing babies on My Housewives. Nope. Don't like it. Hard pass. 90 Day Fiancé is my escape. It's not my reminder that I need to catch up on the baby shit going on in my life. There's still a baby book for my now 8-year-old son that has completely slipped my mind. You know, I was busy steaming sweet potatoes and shit trying to stay sane during their first couple years. I don't want to see baby Lucy anymore. I'm sorry, she's cute, but no, this is my show. Don't need the baby shit. And then there's this lame ring shopping scene. The reason I don't buy this scene at all is because John can't really be this stupid, right? How common is it for a man to wear a ring? Let's see, John. Common enough for you to be at a fucking ring shop shopping for a wedding ring? All right, well, let's see what else the little couple is up to this week. Rachel? I stopped working to marry you this week. Rachel, I'm £30,000 in debt, $50,000 American, but don't worry, because I rent out me mom's house to make £700 a month. Okay, first of all, I don't believe this shit for a second. This is not the first Rachel has heard of it. I don't believe it. If you can sing I Just Can't Wait to Be King from The Lion King with one another on a karaoke app, trust me, you have enough humility to share your $50,000 debt concerns with the person. I'm sure they did have some kind of argument out there on the street before going into that party or rehearsal dinner, whatever it was, but I don't buy it was about him quitting his job and her not knowing about it until just then. Now, that entrance into the party was the height of awkwardness. It kind of took my breath away. Nothing says, hey, congratulations, happy wedding eve, then total silence and judgmental stares from about 20 people. It ended up being fine. It was all, you know, fish and chips and charming accents. So, Rachel, he loves you. All right. Well, speaking of love and happiness, let's talk about the wedding day. Now, Rachel's getting her hair and makeup done. Apparently, John has never seen her with curly hair or makeup. I guess more power to her. I don't let anyone see me without a full mask until I know that I have that shit locked down. That goes for friendships too. Like, no one deserves trauma from my mug without some foundation or at least a touch of eyeliner. But Rachel, she's got confidence, and for that, I am a little envious. But here she comes, the barefoot bride with the baby on her hip. John could have used a better shave on his neck, but I like him with the beard. I am pro beard, so I liked it. He looked handsome. Rachel looked beautiful. She's a very pretty woman. I think it was a good look for her, okay? I enjoyed it. I thought the ceremony and the surroundings were actually super romantic and sweet, and I love a little intimate wedding. It was very sweet. John loves her, and that picnic on the mountainside, okay, totally swooning. I am jealous, and he's a little man, but, you know, I'd be down for that. Now, don't take this as me being completely accepting of the Smurf culture, because we got to talk about Ricky now. Ricky says that he and Ximena are engaged and he's never been so happy. So as soon as he gets back to the States, he's going to start the K-1 visa process immediately in order to get Ximena over here. Now, 5 hours later, we get Ximena, who is pissed off. She's sad, confused, because Ricky's ex-wife just texted her saying that Ricky confided in her that he wasn't serious about Ximena. So Ximena confronts Ricky about it, and he says that, oh, you know what? You don't need to worry about it. I was just lying to my ex-wife because if I tell her the truth, she won't let me see my daughter. This is yet another example of why I always say you never trust a man who wears purple. Ricky is sporting this bold, jewel-toned purple dress shirt, and even my childhood orthodontist, who is now my daughter's orthodontist, whose favorite color is purple. This guy has his entire office in shades of purple. Even he knows to keep his shirts to a pastel purple, to a lavender at the darkest. But here's the thing. I have been asked, and I've been trying to nail down this timeline of Ricky and his first ex-wife, his second ex-wife, who is not yet his ex-wife, and Melissa and Ximena and Katie Not Holmes and others, but I can't figure it out, nor does it truly matter to me, because what matters to me, what bothers me deeply, is that Ricky has dragged his daughters into this whole web of lies, this whole agenda that he has, whatever it might be. His daughter's face is on camera. She's been in scenes. Her photo is still being shown. He is bringing his daughter, who is a tween, a very vulnerable age, into this story of his and using her just to try to legitimatize himself. And that is what grosses me out. I'm also a little grossed out by the word legitimatize. Is that what I'm thinking? Legitimate? Oh, whatever. I can't even think straight. Now, the line that does it for me, the thing that stands out, listen up if you are single, is when someone tells you that they want to, quote, start fresh, trust me, they are lying. There is some shady shit that they've done that they don't want you to look in the past for. They just want instant forgiveness, and by all means, they want you to forget about it. So when someone says start fresh, no. Don't believe it. When you are in love, you don't want to forget the past, right? You want to cherish the past, because we all know that relationships just get worse over time, right? That's why they make marriage a legally binding thing. They suck you in to pay taxes together, and then you're stuck, and then, you know, then comes baby in the baby carriage. So, okay, let's fast forward to they're both leaving. They're at the airport and they're both going to go back to their homes. Ricky's going back to the States. Ximena's going back to the countryside or something. Now, Ricky says he's not crying because he's fighting back the tears. Oh, God. Just like I'm fighting back the tears now. Right. I just felt so icky, though, when I hear Ximena mention Ricky's daughter's name, knowing this guy is married and he has zero intention of his daughter and Ximena ever meeting. Why would he even be okay with Ximena saying his daughter's name? You know what I'm saying? Parents out there, I know you are understanding what I'm trying to say. It's just gross. All right, well then Ricky goes back to the States and yeah, he's going to follow through on that K-1. Wink, wink. Well, strap on your Kevlar vest because it's time to head to Brazil and catch up with Paul and Karine. Karine had her miscarriage. She's at the hospital with her mom. And Paul, you know what, guys? He had a rough night. He decided to stay alone by himself, you know, instead of staying the night with his wife at the hospital because, yeah, exactly. Now, maybe it's because he refuses to sleep with sheets on his bed. I know I'm not the only one that damn near gagged when they saw that hotel mattress sitting there without, not only without a top sheet, sheets, no mattress pad, nothing. Let's not forget that even Countess Luann shat her bed. And here is Paul living it up on a Brazilian knockoff Tempur-Pedic. The thing is, he isn't even that distraught because I saw a room service tray on his bed. But, you know, at least he had a unicorn pillow to keep him all calm and comfy that night, you see, because it's all about Paul. He's scared. He's hurting. He doesn't know what their marriage is going to be like. Yeah, I'm sure Karine's just, you know, relaxing and having a great time at the hospital without her husband there after she had a miscarriage. And you know what? If Paul was thinking how Karine was feeling, but he didn't mention it, then I think we would have seen that. Now, let's jump to Karine arriving back home. Thankfully, she is okay. I mean, like I said, I can be a real bitch, but I'm happy that she's healthy. But back at that Airbnb condo, Paul is filling Karine's love tank with stuffed animals and flowers and emoji pillows from Party City. Unfortunately, those emoji pillows don't pay the bills, and Paul has to go back to the States to make some more money. My guess is they were probably just going to make it off of his savings until they could cash those 90-day fiancé checks. But now with the hospital bills and Paul's new cooling vest, it put them over budget. Now I'm going to be a little hypocritical here, but maybe you'll understand. I know I just was bashing Paul for not being there for Karine while she was in the hospital. But is it bad that I'm kind of relieved Karine will be further recovering with her parents instead of Paul? I can just see Mother Karine being more comforting, a better source of support after a miscarriage than Paul would be. Now we're going to jump ahead here to the scene where Paul is packing in that fucking hoard. And it's an actual hoard. I've seen enough episodes of Hoarders on A&E to be an official expert. He's a hoarder. There's an article on Soap Dish or Radar or something. One of you posted it in the reality TV Orchard of Snark. And it's about his ex calling him a real hoarder. And of course he is. He treasures hairballs, you guys. We know this. But seeing him pick up a renegade pair of underwear that he has clearly forgotten about, pick it up, pee-pee section to the nose, and smell it, and then okaying it and being excited that he has an actual clean pair, you know that means he has been wearing dirty ones, right? Like he's probably doing the old inside-out trick, the forward-backward trick that I learned about on Disney Pixar's Big Hero 6. And let's remember, this is the same guy who claims to be afraid of germs. Okay, just not your own crust, right? Your own crusty underwear is okay. Maybe that's why he can tolerate Karine's unwashed hair. I've seen it, you've seen it too. Let's just all be on the same page here. But Paul, I promise I'd come back, Karine. Okay, Paul, speaking in Karine's high female octave, is not the same as speaking her language, okay? That's not Portuguese. That's just a female voice. Now, strangely, Paul just leaves the apartment, so I guess Karini is going to stay in that Airbnb until he comes back. He's paying the rent there. I don't know. I don't really understand that whole thing, but I do know that I would be pissed if I were Karini, because somewhere in that hoard are a shitload of his dirty undies, and you know it's a literal shitload. Don't need to read between the lines there, unless they're lines of skid marks. Okay, gross. Just grossed myself out. Disgusting. Okay, let's leave it there and go on to Tariq and Hazel. The trip to the beach is over and it is back to Manila. Tariq's brother Dean is waiting at the park with a chip on his shoulder as always and some one-liners up his, oh wait, he doesn't have a sleeve because he has gone with a tank top. I don't know if we've discussed this or not, but I'm not a fan of men in tank tops. Thank God I married a guy who doesn't wear them, or maybe that's why I married him. Didn't really put the pieces together until now, but you know, very few men should wear a tank, and Dean is certainly not one of them. And no one should be using a selfie stick, and of course, Tariq has one of them. It's a brotherly trait to make terrible choices. Now let's take a deep breath, because Hazel comes out with a bombshell. She will be homeless as of tomorrow after Tariq leaves. I actually agree with Tariq that Hazel seems embarrassed by this, but I can't help but to be skeptical because she now has Tariq paying for her to stay at the same Airbnb with no hesitation on his part. And it's not that I want her to be homeless, but maybe we should be skeptical. I am openly and very honestly skeptical of this "we have sexual chemistry in droves" comment, but yet they haven't had sex. That means they've had sex, right? I don't know the lingo with the "we have sexual chemistry in droves," don't know what that means, but I do know enough that she is just saving face for her church. It seems to be a sad situation for everyone because I don't think Hazel loves him. I don't think there's any way, right? I mean, her tears are tears of fear that he's not going to come back, and her hopes for a better future for herself and her child are just going to be dashed. I don't trust her or believe her fully, but how do you judge someone who is just desperate for a better life because they're homeless, they have nothing? It's sad. Or maybe it just seems sad because there was a knockoff of Coldplay's The Scientist playing that got me all sentimental and feeling bad for her. But again, I mean, how do you not feel bad for her? The woman is homeless, and even if she does have a place to stay, she's clearly poor. So I see where she's coming from. Now, previews for next week at the tell-all. Angela looks like she's going to knock Rachel out, and I'm pretty sure John is turned on by it. Hazel comes out with an admission that she was pregnant. Is it Tariq's? Was it before? After? I don't know. And then Jesse's pants turn into capris when he tries to stand up and run away from the set. If you don't know what I'm talking about, go and look at the previews because his freaking tight suit pants are damn near up to his knees. After a quick break, let's get into the 2-hour episode of TLC's Unexpected. Can I tell you how excited I was to hear from Lola? Lola was created by two women who were fed up with buying tampons and pads that have chemicals and dyes in them. Did you know the FDA doesn't regulate any feminine products? So Lola took it on themselves to create a 100% organic, all-natural line of liners, pads, tampons, and now cleansing wipes for women of all ages. I priced it out, and with the offer code REALITV, it's cheaper than the other brands I used to buy. I'm being totally honest with you. I just ordered my second month's supply because I love Lola this much. This is how it works. You pick the items you want, liners, pads, tampons, the absorbencies you want. You can mix and match so your order is exactly what you want. Each month, you pick your delivery date, and it's delivered to your home in discreet packaging. To be honest, I still get embarrassed when I buy my monthly supply of goods, but now I don't have to because it comes right to my door when I need it. My sister just set up subscriptions for her daughters so they each get their own stash, and what I love is their first period kit. Yes, for those lucky girls just starting out. comes with a little pamphlet that's age-appropriate and not at all cheesy or scary like the ones we used to read. And if that isn't enough to convince you, with every purchase you make, Lola donates feminine care products to homeless shelters across the U.S. So here's what you do. Go to mylola.com, enter code REALITV to get 40% off subscriptions. Yeah, 40% using REALITV at mylola.com. We had a 2-hour episode of Unexpected, and you can insert a punny joke there about it being an unexpected surprise, but it really was. Made Sunday a long night, but gotta tell you, those Sunday nights on TLC, it doesn't get any better. Let's start out with Chloe and Max, because not too much happened here. Chloe's mom, Jessica, and her husband are trying to make Chloe's little sister's birthday extra special because of all the attention that's been on Chloe lately. So they're going to go swim with the dolphins. Well, it turns out dolphins can actually pick up on a human pregnancy or having, I don't know, another brain inside your body or something, which makes me wonder if that is why I myself am freaked out by underwater creatures, even knowing that they can sense something else going inside your body freaks me out. It's like they can sense my inner voice and my overactive mind working 24/7. Something about deep water and the things that live in it, it freaks me out. And I know where it stems from. I was at the zoo when I was younger, and they said that dolphins can live in 16 feet of water, which happens to be the same depth of the deep end at the pool where I grew up. And just knowing that I can die in that depth of water because underwater creatures may come swim up to me after I dive in, it's terrifying. Yeah, I know it makes no sense, but this is the brain I was born with, and here we are. Now, back to Chloe. Later in the day, she's still feeling like crap, so they decide that they're going to take off to the hospital because she's 40 weeks pregnant already. Unfortunately, they send her home because she's only 1.5 centimeters dilated. Jessica was being, you know, a little overprotective, and she wanted them to induce Chloe, but they're not going to do that. So we'll see what happens next week. Not too much with them. Now, Lexis, Kelsey, and Shaden. It is prom night in Monticello, Indiana, and I think I need to start saving up now for prom because this stuff is crazy. She's getting her hair done, her nails done, her makeup done. I didn't even have this extensive of service done on me when I got married, and here they're getting airbrushed. Is this normal? It just seems like a lot. It's not my super sweet 16 level because, to be honest, it went downhill pretty damn quickly. The guy that Kelsey is dating, this guy Maurice, I've said it before, I don't like him. He's too young. He just puts off this air of needing his ego puffed up a lot. And I just think Kelsey needs someone to take care of her. Now, second, this asking Shaden to prom stuff. I mean, you've had a baby together. Do we really need to go through the formality of asking him to a dance? It's not like you're proposing, right? It's a dumb school dance. She did some weird poster. It's fine. I'll allow that. I draw the line at the poster. It's just the elaborate stuff that kids do now. We got to stop that stuff. This is the same level as every kid gets a trophy. You keep doing this kind of shit. You make things way too magical in their childhood. I'm not going to say anything. You guys know what I'm talking about. But this is where it leads to, where all of a sudden asking someone to prom requires a marching band and signs and banners and airplanes flying across the sky and all that kind of shit. We just gotta like bring it down, a poster at the very most. Anyway, Shaden ends up being upset at Lexis because she's making them run late. And then Kelsey gets mad at Shaden for yelling at Lexis. Now here's my take on it, and it pains me to say this because I'm always pro Kelsey, but I have to agree with Shaden here. Lexis was acting like a brat. He's asking her, hey, you excited for it? And she's like, I don't know, kind of. Well, Lexis, come on. He spent money. Your mom spent money. You probably spent some of your own money. And now you're acting like, oh, it's not all that thrilling. That's just being snotty and snippy, as my mom Carol would say. Just the acting like you're too cool for it shit, that you're better than everything, nothing's really all that nice in your life. It's not attractive. It's not cute. No, I'm not saying Shaden is amazing at all. He still acts like an entitled, overgrown toddler, but come on. Is it that hard just to say, yeah, I'm excited. Just suck it up. I mean, is it that hard to lie? Sometimes you just have to. It's called manners. All right. Well, speaking of someone who lacks all manners, that would be Diego and his girlfriend, Emily. Their daughter is 6 weeks old, and she's going to her doctor checkup with Diego, Emily, and Diego's father, Fabian. Diego sure is back. Forgot how much I couldn't stand this kid in the 2 weeks that we've had off from him, that we were free from him. And he comes in just guns blazing with a little dad analogy. He says, being a father is like cheesecake. After the first bite, you're like, huh, yeah. And then you take your last bite and you're like, oh shit, what did I just do? His parents just giggle and smile and giggle and smile. No. Being a dad is like realizing you don't have any time for any fucking cheesecake anymore, because that requires you to get back from the store in time to put your groceries away back into the fridge, while also having to get your kid out of the back seat of the car, in the car seat, bring the car seat in with all the groceries. What do you do first? I'm exhausted even just thinking about it. PTSD. Diego has no clue. He's not there day to day. I promise you that. Back to this doctor appointment that they have their daughter Aria at. Well, this doctor ends up being some other type of physician. I think they said a family care doctor, not a pediatrician. However, Emily's mom recommended this doctor because she had worked with her before. Well, you know, anything Emily's mom recommends, Diego's going to want to do the complete opposite. So Emily, Diego, and Fabian make it out to be that Bridget, her mom, is just some raging bitch for recommending this doctor. Well, here's what I think about it so far. I am pretty certain Emily's mom was not trying to be a bitch. She's just trying to be helpful. Like, hey, here's a doctor that I know and that I trust. You can go to her, and I know that my daughter, my granddaughter are going to be in good hands. And plus, those of us who have had children in a hospital know, before you can leave the hospital, you need to have a pediatrician or a doctor check out your baby. So if this doctor was close to the hospital, which is what it sounds like, it would make sense that Bridget would have recommended this doctor. She can come see the baby very easily because the location of the doctor's office in the hospital is there, and you have a doctor that knows you, knows me, knows your baby, and she can get her in and out of the hospital. Okay, all that aside, there's then some comments made in the car about how Aria cried a lot during the visit. So, you know, maybe this doctor isn't good with babies. Well, okay, maybe she's not, but also babies cry when they're undressed and they're cold and they're being checked out, a cold stethoscope, and you have to take their clothes off. They're just down to a diaper. So that's going to happen at pretty much any doctor you go to. It's just par for the course. Dr. Diego should know this. Now then we get to the scene where Diego is once again sitting with his parents, and he plain out says, I'm a spiteful person. So him knowing that Bridget will be mad about switching doctors has perks to it. And then his dad raises his eyebrow and smirks and smiles along with him. No, Mr. Diego, no one else thinks your son is as charming as you think he is. And that goes for you, Mrs. Diego, as well. I like to think Emily likes Diego's parents. I really don't like them because, once again, they produced and they encouraged Diego. But I think Emily likes them because they are so lax. They're not her parents. Of course, they're going to let her do whatever she wants. And she's going to love the freedom that she gets because she is not their daughter. They raised a Diego. Emily, think about it. Do you want your daughter to end up being a total dick like Diego? Then go ahead and hang around them some more, because that's exactly what's going to happen. Bridget may be controlling, but if controlling parenting produces a kid anything other than a Diego, I will choose the controlling parent any day. Now jump ahead to Bridget waiting for Emily at Emily's 6-week postpartum follow-up at her OB. It appears that Emily was probably running late because Bridget is hurrying her along, reminding her that the doctor's got to go. He has a surgery scheduled. In an interview separately, Bridget admits Emily has been spending more time with Diego and his family, and I have to say, just on a mother level, as a mother myself, that would hurt a lot. And also, if you are a nurse or a professional that has a working relationship with these same doctors and the doctor's offices that you're going to, of course you don't want it to be your kid being the one fucking up people's schedules. So I understand where Bridget is coming from. But let's fast forward a little bit again, and we get to a scene I thought was just really, really sad. And it's when Bridget confronts Emily on Emily ignoring her and her family and choosing Diego's family over all of them. It was nothing but heartbreaking. And again, I am biased. I'm a mother. I can't help but put myself in Bridget's shoes. So maybe it's selfish, but maybe it's just a mom's heart always wanting their child want to be with them. Really what it is that she feels like Emily doesn't like her or that Emily doesn't need her anymore, that she's not good enough for Emily and she's not good enough for her granddaughter. Just gut-wrenching to watch. However, I do see both sides because the phone call that Emily made asking Bridget to sit down with herself and Diego, I start to feel torn on this one. On the one hand, I can see Bridget saying no because she and Emily do need to talk one-on-one about some things without Diego there. But she can't always be all or nothing with her daughter either. That's not going to get her anywhere. Even Bridget's mom agrees with Emily that Bridget just needs to talk to her whether Diego is there or not. I really like Emily's grandma. I think she is a very good grandma. It's easy for her to say like, oh, don't listen to your mom. You do what you need to do for your daughter and let your mom be mad at you. But, you know, a grandma can say that. It's a much different situation when it is your daughter hurting you and purposely leaving you out. Now about this whole cheerleading career. Oh boy. Well, Emily loves it and she's going to try out for this college team. I am no cheerleading expert. I was a cheerleader for a year in high school and I dabbled in middle school, but I didn't really see collegiate level cheering on her part. She had a very flexible herky jump. I saw that. Her candlesticks, I think they need some work. They weren't as stiff as they needed to be. Her smile was lacking, but the hair. We got to talk about this hair. What is this look that the teenagers are going for? They pull out these tufts of hair, these tendrils of hair, kind of like, is it the Hasidic Jewish people? They have the little tendril curl things. I'm not dissing them. I'm just trying to make an analogy. You can picture it in your mind. I don't know if it's supposed to look like, oh, I just got down from this basket toss and my hair fell out from in front of my ears. It's just not a good look. If you have daughters, fill me in on it. I just don't understand where this look is going. I also don't understand where this scholarship for cheerleading is going, but if Emily makes the team and she gets a college scholarship, then I think my kids have a chance for a full ride. Let's go on to Michaela and Kaylin. Kaylin is on the scene first, reminding us that he and Michaela are engaged and they've saved up enough money to get a place on their own. Blah, blah, blah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Why was Grandma Cindy eating fried chicken with blueberries and cream on top? I don't know if that's an Ohio thing. I don't know if it's a flavor combination I've never heard of, but it was something that even alarmed the camera guy because he zoomed in on it. Someone fill me in here. Is it a chicken and waffles thing, but instead it's a chicken and blueberry pancake thing? Anyway, Michaela starts throwing a hissy fit at dinner because she wanted to move into their apartment tonight. Meanwhile, everyone else at the table is like, yeah, tonight's not going to work. It's already too late. There's just no logic in it. It doesn't make sense to move in that night. But Michaela is acting, dare I say, immature or a little spoiled. I think Grandpa Tim would agree with me because he comes off in this scene as a very good mix of loving but tough love, because he tells Michaela like it is. He isn't afraid to tell her when she is being unreasonable. And I gotta think, Tim having raised a daughter that turned out like Shannon has made the man think once or twice about how he raised Michaela. Perhaps trying to undo the wrongs and make sure that there's no repeats. She must have listened to her grandpa because they didn't move in that night. But the next night, they show up at their apartment. It's a basic starter apartment. And I love, love, love how Tim and Cindy are giving them a hard time predicting about how hard it's going to be for them to keep up on the cleaning. Because I already know I am going to be saying the same thing to my kids, because you never, ever know how hard it is to maintain a house, an apartment, whatever it is that you're living, a dorm, until you have one of your own and you experience the pride in your own place and keeping it the way you want to keep it. And God, I love this Kalen kid. He just gets in there, starts scrubbing that toilet, and starts giving Michaela shit for never having cleaned a toilet before. I am sure Tim is going to see it, Cindy seeing it in the scene where Kalen's hands are in the toilet scrubbing it, that it's Michaela who has been the one making a mess, blaming it on Kalen the whole time. I can pretty much guarantee it. Now let's get to the Shannon scene that we've been teased with over the last 2 weeks with previews. Michaela has to tell Shannon that she's gotten a place with Kalen, even though she bailed on getting that place with Shannon at the last minute. Now, truth be told, Shannon took it pretty well, but she knew it was coming, right? She knows Michaela is going to do what she wants to do because, let's face it, she does the same. Now, speaking of doing what she wants to do, Michaela wants to go dress shopping. And this is where Queen Shelley arrives and Shannon is sitting there, and even I felt awkward months later, hundreds of miles away from that store, just watching this scene. Thank God for smartphones to stare into and avoid conflict. I actually think that was the reason why Michaela had Shannon come in and help her change, because she didn't want Shannon and Shelley sitting out there together talking. It's better that Tim and Cindy are out there with Shelley. Inside the dressing room, Michaela's trying on all these dresses. They all look beautiful on her because she's tiny, she's little, she's young. She looked beautiful. But at the heart of this scene is the feeling that everyone has that Michaela and Kalen are just rushing things too quickly. But nevertheless, Michaela persisted and she buys the dress. Finally, onto our last couple, Laura and Tyler. Babies poop and pee on you. But back to sister Anna. You see, she's been having temper tantrums because Laura's son Lucas, you know, who's a baby, cries, but she wants to sleep. Now, the only thing making Laura and Tyler's storyline seem dramatic or even TV worthy are the very deep, furrowed brows of Laura's parents. They are always very deep in thought. They're always stressed out. I get that they're in a stressful situation, but Jesus Christ, don't go ruining your facial elasticity over it. And this Laura, sister Anna storyline thing, I don't get it because they're making it out to be poor little Anna, but it's weird because Anna herself has an older boyfriend. She's a freshman in high school and she's dating this older guy. And the family plays it like Anna's all innocent and here I am, right? Innocent Jody, not ready at all for what Laura and Tyler are about to drop the bomb on the nation. They say something about Anna and her boyfriend. They're doing other things and then something with a sweatshirt. I don't want to know. Please do not tell me. Please don't tag me. I really, really don't want to know if it involves anything more than minor children touching a boob. Nope, can't handle it. I can't go there. But Laura, oh, she wants to go there. She wants to get down to it. So what does she do? She runs and tells her mom that she knows that Anna is having sex. So they go upstairs where little innocent Anna is laying on red sheets. What? Now, if that is not a sign, I don't know what is. Just kidding. I'm totally kidding. I'm just joking out of feeling uncomfortable because even watching this scene made me feel like I was being confronted by my mother. But Mother Laura, I am saying this as someone who does not like to talk about this sexual kind of stuff, but come on, she needs to expand on the your body gets rid of nutrients when she's talking about, I think she was talking about her period. I don't know what the hell she was talking about. I don't even know if she knows how babies are made, but Father Laura is all about the Bible. So maybe he thinks, you know, fruits and seeds and nutrients make a baby. That's what he's telling Anna and Laura. I don't know. But mom and dad, you got to know that your daughter Anna is having sex and you need to talk to her, a serious talk to her. I don't think Laura talking to her is going to do much because she's pregnant. Anna's not going to listen to her. And the parents' shy laugh and giggle and the talk about it not being biblical, that shit's not working. Kids these days are not going to be listening to that, and it doesn't mean anything. But I do think I have a great general rule in regards to readiness for sex, okay? I really think this could take off. If you are still wearing a scrunchie in your hair, especially in the half-up, half-down style, you're too young to be having sex. Permission revoked, not going to happen. Think about it, just putting it out there. And maybe if you have daughters, make them wear some scrunchies. Or your sons, girlfriends, give them some scrunchies for their birthday or for Christmas. All right, next week we have Chloe giving birth to her baby and Tyler asks Laura to marry him. Stick around because up next we have Married at First Sight. You know how I love Poshmark, right? Well, I have a little secret to share. I got a Coach purse for my anniversary, and while I love my husband and the thought behind it, I just don't find myself using it often. So I just started creating my listing to sell it on Poshmark.com. If you're like me and use something a few times and then you hate to see a pricey item just sitting in your closet, you can sell it on Poshmark and then shop millions of closets across America for a new replacement. That's the fun part for me. Now they've made it even easier to buy and sell with the free Poshmark app, where you can shop for women, kids, and men. They have tons of brands to choose from. Ann Taylor, Boden, I saw this gorgeous Marquesa dress that'd be perfect to wear for a wedding. And what I am looking for right now, a North Face jacket for my kids who just have to have one. As listeners of Reality TV, you get $5 off your first purchase. Use referral code REALITV, REALITV at checkout. That's REALITV, Poshmark.com, the easiest way to buy and sell fashion. It's day 50 and the couples are on their mini moons. It's a chance to say anything they need to say before decision day. Yeah, well, I have something to say before decision day. We deserve our own mini moons for making it through this many weeks of this incredibly boring season of Married at First Sight. Let's catch up with Dave and Amber first. They're strolling in their beautiful hotel courtyard, reminiscing about the good old days of 40 whole days ago when they were on their honeymoon. Now Amber is all goo-goo gaga. She feels like the honeymoon was the best time they ever had. But Davey Downer is here. He straightens and flattens Amber's grown-out extensions, and he says he feels differently. That, yeah, the honeymoon was great, but they have a deeper connection now, and he likes it better where they're at now. Well, then over some cocktails, they start talking about where they are at and what's the next step? Ugh, I'm actually rubbing my head here. Where are the experts? This question, what is the next step for us? It's a recipe for disaster. This question doesn't even go over well when you're an established couple. You can't even be in a car asking for directions on a road trip. Avoid the conversational intersection about what the next step is at all cost. Put it in reverse. Now, what Dave says in this conversation that ends up being an episode-long conflict is it's just going to be time before we see what our next step is. It's only been 8 weeks. We're still figuring out who we are together, and what we want. Well, what Amber hears is, I'm going to divorce you. I don't like you. What Jody hears is, we can't say what our decision will be out loud on camera, so I need to be purposely vague, Amber. Yeah, it's not that hard to figure out. However, I need to point out the obvious flaw here. It's Dave. I've said it before, I think it's just his general affect and delivery that makes him come off as a jerk. And that does not pair well with Amber, who becomes uber focused on finding one detail of something that maybe it makes her feel insecure, she doesn't like it, and then she just beats it to death. This carries over to this vineyard where they sit down. It is beautiful. They have a delicious looking charcuterie. This place is right up my alley. The only thing I'd have to nitpick are those wrought iron chairs. I hate when places have that because they leave that perfect lattice print pattern indented on your thighs as soon as you stand up. It's a great camouflage for natural cellulite, but it sucks. Restaurants, hotels, get rid of the wrought iron. We can do better. Now, Amber can also do better, but she just can't help herself. I'm sure there is pressure to talk about their relationship. You know, producers, they need something to record, right? But even so, Amber has got to take a breath. I mean, look, this is coming from me, so you know she really needs to. Dave is not the type of guy, or he is not at the place in the relationship yet where he's just going to be spilling I love yous. Most of us are women watching this, and I think we see it in Amber. Maybe it's projection. Maybe we've done this ourselves. She wants Dave to be all mushy, gushy. I love you. You're amazing. Just spill his confession of loving her right here and now. And until that happens, she's just decided she's going to be a stage five clinger and be super self-conscious. Of course, this makes watching their scenes incredibly painful, and they just drag on forever and ever, which then leads to the dinner on the Riverwalk. Amber herself already knows it's going to be incredibly long and awkward, and Dave is still being standoffish and cold. So when Amber asks him again why he's being cold, where they're at in the relationship, he snaps. Now, he pulls a pretty dick move, and he starts mumbling that he's just not going to try anymore because there's no point. He doesn't have any more patience. And then he throws out the one word that I'm sure we're all guilty of using, and that is, whatever. Ugh, that's such a bullshit move. It's very high school guy-girl right there. This is where, once again, Amber claims that Dave said that he had no feelings for her. He denies it, and he should, because we all saw him. He did say he had feelings for her. Then she starts calling him a dick, and then out of nowhere, Dave just goes, yeah, I know, and he smiles, and they start laughing. So please tell me what I missed. My DirecTV was jumping and freezing, as it always does. DirecTV sucks. But I don't know if I missed something major. I don't know where this little laughing fit about him being a dick came from. Whatever the hell they were drinking that just allowed them to jump over that kind of hurdle and start laughing at it, send it my way, because I would love for my marital conflicts to be just resolved like that. Dave, you're a dick. Oh, I know. Cheers. Threw me for a loop. I didn't like it. You know what it felt like? You know, the Bickersons, meaning the couple that we all know that they all bicker in public and it's super awkward. It was like watching the Bickersons making up, and witnessing a couple who constantly bickers making up is actually more awkward and more uncomfortable than watching them bicker. Well, the next morning, they are all happy and smiles. They're heading out, and I need to point out the obvious. Dave is still wearing, now it's a red heather shirt, a heathered red shirt, I guess you would call it. He bought those things in every freaking color, and he is not shy about it. Now let's move on to a couple that I have not been shy about despising, and that is Mia and Tristan. Now Tristan's alone in his hotel room because if you remember, Mia left in the middle of the night saying she wanted a divorce. He hasn't heard from her, and then, oh, she texts him and says that she wants to talk. Well, he's at the point where he just wants to have it out, put it all out there, have a conversation. So she comes to the hotel, and then he lays down and proceeds to throw his feet on her lap. First of all, no, get your feet off me. And second of all, sit up, Tristan. You are on TV. You're having a conversation. Stop the slouching. But even the slouching aside, the conversation and the couple in general, they're just a total mess. Tristan is being a hothead. I don't think Mia is completely to blame for this relationship. His fuse is short, but what Mia said made me instantly snap to and put all the slouching and nasty feet aside. She said she told Tristan that she wanted a divorce and she left in the middle of the night because what she wanted him to do was to stop and say, "No, don't leave. I want you to stay. I want you to be with me." Well, come on. You can't set the guy up for a test, Mia. That's just not fair. And I think we all know this type of girl. She's the type of girl who loves the push and pull in a relationship, loves the makeup part, you know, where he grabs her and hugs her. And then knowing Mia, she's going to turn into that weird little hermit crab where she curls up into her sweater or blanket and then looks up at him and is like, "Oh, you're my safe place. Wherever you are, wherever you go, I go." Well, in the end, Tristan thinks Mia saying she wants to make their marriage work at this point, well, he's changed his mind. Now he wants to fight for it too. Ugh, don't understand what they are doing. I think Mia just wants someone to cuddle, maybe just go to Walmart. You know, they have those gigantic teddy bears, especially this time of year around the holidays. Go get one of those, or even a sleeping bag, a Snuggie. She just needs something to retract into. Now, these two, for their day date, they go to this lake where they set up a picnic, and I didn't think watching these two could make me roll my eyes anymore, but they did. They really did, and it was that picnic basket. Two apples, one of them a Red Delicious. I mean, really, you couldn't have sprung for, oh, I don't know, a Granny Smith, a Braeburn. No. So two apples, a dry bagel, not even sliced, red grapes that looked a little hazy, and an orange. Oh, and a blueberry muffin. I mean, the calories packed in that little tiny muffin, you might as well just go get a donut. But don't worry, Tristan pats Mia on the back and then they jump up to go skip rocks together. Ooh, what a love connection. Now let's jump to the dinner on the rooftop. Now, I'm a little nervous to ask this. I don't want this to come off in a bad way. I'm just curious. Is it just me or did Tristan seem a little medicated or high? He had pinpoint pupils. I actually noticed it too when he was in that hotel room with his friends a few weeks ago. But I thought, oh no, it's just a one-time thing. And then if you noticed, throughout the dinner, he started coming back around to his normal self. And by the end, he seemed more himself than ever. Not as slow and deliberate as when they first sat down. Now, obviously, I am not an expert, but I just think it's something to think about. See if you notice anything next week. Moving right along, we have Bobby and Danielle waking up together in the grown-up's bed. You can see that they threw a pillow to the side of the bed in order to step down from, you know, how up high they are in the king bed because, you know, they're little people. And little Danielle loves her cinnamon rolls. And since Bobby is head over heels in love with her, he just gets busy cracking open that Pillsbury can. You know, as much as I think Bobby is a total nerd, I also am coming to realize how much Danielle is really starting to get on my nerves, more than Bobby. I think it's just her lack of personality. She doesn't like Bobby as much as he likes her. She doesn't seem to contribute much to the conversation, let alone helping around the house, not much to the relationship. So I don't really get what it is that Bobby likes. Is it her boobs? Because it's certainly not her eyebrows. Well, let's jump to fishing day. So the Dodds head out into the water in their waders. And I've never been fishing, but seeing them do this, it actually made me want to try it. I've never actually been fishing. I don't want to actually catch a fish because, ew, things that breathe besides humans scare me. But I see why Bobby likes it. It seems very relaxing. He wants Danielle to take off her makeup, which I think is a huge hint, hint, wink, wink, put down the brow palette, and get back to basics. So they joke around and they're laughing like two prepubescent schoolgirls together. Am I the only one finding that his laughter is higher than my highest octave range? I mean, can you even imagine how high he'll squeal when Danielle finally says, I love you? Now, it's funny because, you know, I started getting really frustrated with Danielle because she never reciprocates I love you back to Bobby, right? But I had to check myself. See, I am able to have a little self-reflection as well, because I don't think she should say it if she's not feeling it. She should not be obligated to say anything to Bobby. She's allowed to take her time, and I'm allowed to cringe about the awkwardness in the meantime, and also that he said, I love you like I love my mom and sister. Ooh, kind of weird choice of words. Now, next week is decision day. They better not do a little bait and switch where we lead up to right before the moment where they say they want a divorce or not. Cross our fingers, because as much as I love this show, it is dragging. Well, hopefully today's episode didn't drag for you. I really appreciate you tuning in. Please remember to subscribe, share, tell a friend. Thank you so much to those of you who have left such amazing 5-star reviews. I truly, truly appreciate it. And check out my other podcast, Moms on the Rocks. Carrie and I are going to be talking about some paranormal and freaky stuff just in time for Halloween. So head on over there. That's Moms on the Rocks. And we are at MomsOTR on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. Remember to check out the show notes for links to my amazing sponsors this week, Poshmark and Lola. Until next time, stay salty.